Let me run this by my lawyer is a really helpful phrase to have in your back pocket. LegalShield has been giving legal peace of mind for over 50 years. They connect you to a vetted law firm in your state for an affordable monthly fee. Want an experienced set of eyes on a contract fine print? Or you finally want to get that will done? LegalShield has a dedicated group of lawyers who have your back, no matter what the future brings. Sign up today at LegalShield.com/iHeart. PPLSI does not provide legal representation or advice. See a plan for complete terms.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
This episode of Thinking Sideways is not brought to you by Puddin. Instead, it's brought to you by all those little fuzzy creatures that you want to take home and make friends. I know I adopted a critter. She's right here. Wave, kitten. You can't hear that, but that's her fuzzy paw waving into the microphone. And she's the best little kitten ever. And if you want to get yourself a friend, don't go to the pet store. Go down to your local shelter and adopt a puppy or a kitten or a full-grown adult dog or cat or whatever else they have. And if you've hit your pet quotient, which there really is, there's a limit, don't get too many, then you can still help out by donating your time or your money. They always need help. So go down there and make it happen.
Hey guys, welcome to another episode of Thinking Sideways, the podcast. I am Devin, joined as always by
Joe,
who already looks bored, and
no.
Steve, sorry, I was looking at him. He kind of had
He looks super bored already.
He had the face of somebody who's been caught. He had the expression of that, like, oops.
I'm serious, that's all.
For this super serious episode.
This is a serious topic here.
All right.
Okay.
This is about that continent at the bottom of our world that keeps us right side up.
It
weighs a lot.
It's true.
Is that the center of gravity or is that the fulcrum?
It's our ballast.
Oh, God. Another term.
Another
gets me
term.
Every time.
It's about the center of gravity is in the middle of the Earth.
That's the North Pole.
Yeah.
Right. Obviously. Sorry. Yeah. We've already divulged. It's fine. This is going to be good. Devolved, not divulged.
Yeah. No, divulged would be sharing some. Yeah, you got it.
That's
yeah.
great. Today's episode was recommended by Colton. So thanks, Colton.
Hey, thanks, guy.
Yeah.
Guy.
Or
thanks, guy.
Woman, or thanks,
pal.
Person. Yeah, I don't know.
Buddy.
Yeah.
And we are going to talk about Operation High Jump and the many weird conspiracy mysteries that surround it.
Yay!
Okay.
It's going to be chilling.
It's a Bodhi mystery, kind of.
It's kind of got some Bodhi.
It's kind
involved.
Of a lot of different mysteries put together.
There's a lot of weird stuff going on here.
It's true. Including me. You are likely
unfamiliar. You notice nobody started or said,
No, there's nothing weird about you,
weird
Devin.
Pause.
I'm sorry. I totally dropped the ball on that one.
Okay.
Yeah.
You are likely unfamiliar with Operation High Jump, which was officially called the United States Navy Antarctic Developments Program 1990. 1946 to 1947, and rightfully so, because why would you know about this? Operation High Jump was one of 28 expeditions made to Antarctica, which is the South Pole for you people who don't know what that
is. Geographically confused.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Five of these 28 were taken on by the United States. Unsurprisingly, Britain holds the record because they just like to colonize everything.
They visit everywhere.
They do, yeah. They visited Antarctica 11 times. And visits are still happening. These are just these, like, grand expeditions.
These
expeditions of discovery.
Yeah.
Yeah, there actually were a lot of... the Argentines, for example, have been sort of poking around Antarctica since, like, the early 19th century. I mean, very early 19th century.
They're much closer than we are.
They definitely. It's a lot easier for them.
Yeah. This specific expedition took place, if you were paying attention, you may already know. Took place from 1946 to 1947 and involved 4,700 men and lots of boats and aircrafts. Officially, there were 6 submissions of this mission.
Expedition?
Yep. Mm. The primary mission of the expedition being establishing Little America 4. Yeah, 4.
No.
I don't remember Roman numerals. It's fine.
I was like, IV?
IV.
So Little America 4.
Little America 4. Which was just the base of operations for Operation High Jump, so...
Literally the jumping off point?
Well, yeah, it's kind of weird. They were like, well, our primary goal is to establish the base of the operations for the expedition where our primary goal is to establish the base of operations for our primary expedition goal.
Mm. I really feel like I'm watching a Leslie Nielsen movie.
Yeah, a little bit.
That's like, yeah, we were at a part of town they called Little Italy. Mm-hmm. Did you ever see that episode?
Of course, I did. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, the submissions, not to be confused with submissions, were 1, training personnel and testing equipment in frigid conditions. 2, consolidating and extending the United States sovereignty over the largest practicable area of the Antarctic continent. This was publicly denied even before the expedition ended. It's always been denied. 3, determining the feasibility of establishing, maintaining, and utilizing bases in the Antarctic for investigation and investigating possible base sites. 4, developing techniques for establishing, maintaining, and utilizing air bases on ice with particular attention to later applicability of such techniques to operations in interior Greenland, where conditions are comparable to those of the Antarctic. So what are you guys doing living there? All the 50,000 listeners we have in Greenland.
Yeah. Well, how many people live in Greenland anyway?
50,000, and all of them listen to us. Yeah.
Yeah, they're required to by law.
Yeah. The 5th submission was amplifying existing stores of knowledge of electromagnetic, geographic, geological, hydrographic, and meteorological propagation conditions in the area. This is fancy talk, you guys. I'm sorry. Yeah. And somebody printed the script like front to back, so it's like, it's fine. And
it's cheap paper.
I know. And 6 is supplementary objectives to the Nanook expedition, which was a smaller expedition to Greenland.
Yeah.
Off of the east of Greenland, but yeah.
Mm. Yeah, I guess Greenland is rather inhospitable from what I've heard.
Yeah.
Not the people. I'm sure they're wonderful, but you know, the climate.
Well, no, that was... Oh, God. Who was it that discovered Greenland? Do either of you remember? Because they named it Greenland in an attempt to encourage people to move there to make it sound more hospitable and nicer. It's a green land.
It was the Vikings, I think. But it was... But actually, that was, I think, in the medieval warm period or something like that, or even before that.
It
actually wasn't all iced over, at least not nearly as much.
So it was kind of greenish?
It was a lot greener than it is today. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So in an effort to try to summarize, as many of you have been asking for lately, in like 5 sentences or less, what this mystery is, the mystery here is that a lot of people think that this is just a big cover-up for one of many different reasons, and I want to play it a little close to the chest and not tell you.
Sure.
But basically that the Navy was sent to battle with like UFOs or
the
aliens
Nazis.
Or Nazis, or to hide some stuff from public consumption. So that's our mystery, is what really was Operation High Jump and what were their actual missions,
objectives. First of all, when the military wants to hide something, they just take it to Area 51.
So usually.
I'm going to shoot that one down right away.
Okay.
Yeah, but they can't get all of Antarctica in Area 51. I mean, the temperature's totally different.
Yeah, but yeah, on the other
well,
hand.
Well, maybe they could, because if you just melt it down, I don't know how much there is. Let's talk about Operation High Jump for a minute. We're going to talk about who was involved and like what ships were involved, and maybe Joe knows some things about some of these ships. I don't know.
No, probably not.
Operation High Jump was officially organized by Rear Admiral Richard E. Byrd Jr., the United States Navy retired. Mm. He was the officer in charge of Task Force 68, which
he was not retired at the time, he was retired eventually. Yeah,
he was still active, but he was the officer in charge of Task Force 68, which is what Operation High Jump, all of the people who were a part of it, they were part of Task Force 68, and a lot of them were like Task Force 68.1 why not? Oh, and it was led by Rear Admiral Richard H. Cruzan,
because Byrd wasn't there on the ground, per se, the whole time.
He showed up pretty late and left pretty early.
Right.
Yeah.
That was kind of his gig, but he was not actually the point man.
It was kind of his gig because you may or may not know this about Byrd. He claims to have been the first person to reach both the North and South Poles. There's a lot of contentions about this claim. It is documented he reached the South Pole fine, but a lot of people think he didn't actually reach the North Pole.
Mm. There's a lot of contention about people who reach the poles. Every time somebody says it, they're like, if you can't easily prove it, as in you took 100 people or filmed the whole thing, it was always contested.
Even if you took 100 people, it's kind of difficult sometimes. Well, I mean, I guess if you have the right instruments, you can prove that you were there.
But it's hard. I mean, there's not, our listeners, I think, probably know this, but maybe not. There's not actual poles just like sticking out of the ground that say, like, this is the North Pole and this is the South Pole, and congratulations, you've made it.
Yeah.
Technically, there have been people who have gone, figured out their location, said, I am at the pole, stuck a pole in the ground, and if you wait 25 minutes, that pole is no longer at the north because of the ice shelves moving on the north anyway.
And to be fair, I meant like naturally occurring poles. It's not like everybody like could say, when you get to that pole, you're at the North Pole, because like it's the North Pole.
Yeah, like a top's got that little thing sticking off the top of it that you use to spin it with your fingers. Right?
Yeah, it is a little known fact that the earth does not spin, because God is just like whipping us around like a top every once in a while. That's not how it works. Sorry.
Oh, it isn't?
No, but we'll talk about that on a different episode.
Okay.
Anyway, Byrd had been previously on a funded expedition. The first United States expedition to the Antarctica was actually, it was called like Byrd's Expedition or something like that, and he led it, and that was his big thing, was leading these extravagant expeditions,
because these things always turn out so well,
right? So that's why he was like in charge of the whole thing. I think he convinced some lawmakers and the president that it was worth it.
Or somebody said, hey, that guy, we should bring him in. He's done it before.
The impression I have is that he brought it to their attention, actually.
Oh,
that he was like, you know what we should do again? Go to the South Pole. Yeah. That's a good idea.
Well,
and
he
again,
probably did, probably did say something in the order of, there's a lot of people going down there and setting up bases. Mm-hmm. We better go down and just sort of stake a claim.
Yeah. And we'll talk about a lot of the actual reasoning a little bit later. There were 5 different groups on the expedition, and they went different ways. I don't know if you guys got a chance to look at the map. There were different like approaches that people took.
They came all over the place.
They did, and it was kind of interesting, actually. They ended up kind of completely coming from totally opposite directions to Antarctica, and basically, the Navy just kind of circumvented the entire...
Circumnavigated?
Circumnavigated.
That works a little better. Yeah.
The entire continent of Antarctica, they made like a big circle in kind of simultaneously around it. Which, again, has a lot of people scratching their heads.
Really?
The East Group was 3 ships, which was the USS Pine Island.
Wait, so back up here. This entire expedition was broken into how many groups?
5.
5 groups total?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's what we're describing as each of the groups.
Yeah.
Okay, just make sure I was on board with where we were.
Yeah, super important to the whole story.
The
USS Pine Island, which was a seaplane tender, and there were over 30 aircraft.
Just plural is aircraft.
Yeah.
Without the S.
Over 30 aircraft that also participated in this expedition, both seaplanes and pontoon helicopters, which I think there's an actual term for, but I could not remember what it was.
I don't know. It's a good question.
It's fine.
Little floaty helicopters?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, with pontoons on the
bottom.
The
ones that go bouncy when they land.
Yeah. Uh-huh. the USS Brownson, which was a destroyer, and the USS Canisteo, which was a tanker. And these were all, like, kind of state-of-the-art ships, by the way, as we're going through this. A couple of them were actually, like, the most state-of-the-art ships of the time.
Recently built, but most of them were
pretty new.
Well, this is, the year after World War II in the U.S.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
We've been churning out.
We had built a lot of ships, and so, hey.
We had to put them to use.
That's probably what this was all about. It's like, you know, we got some bored sailors. Yeah. Okay, we'll give them something to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Shh, shh, shh.
Oh, sorry.
The central group was the USS Mount Olympus, which was in charge of all of the communications for this expedition and later became kind of the floating communications hub once they got to the space where they were going, which was the Ross Ice Shelf right off the Ross Sea. So, you know, those of you who
Ross Ice Shelf.
Yeah. Those of you who know the landscape of the Antarctic know what I'm talking about, but probably no one else does. So yeah, we'll talk about that in a second.
Speaking of which, if you look at a map of Antarctica and you see like there's the Weddell Sea, which is to the east of the Antarctic Peninsula that stretches up towards South America.
Mm-hmm.
And then go way around that peninsula and there's a Ross Ice Shelf. And there's all sorts of seas, and there's just regular intervals at like this sea,
there's
that
a different sea.
And,
yeah.
And it's like I don't see any particular reason why you should call this a sea, because there's nothing like sticking out and kind of defining it as a bay, a mm-hmm. sea, or anything else.
It is my understanding that the reason that those are named, and please feel free to email us if this is wrong, but it was my impression that the reason that they're all named different things, lots of the land masses are named different things too.
Yeah.
And that's because a bunch of different countries have come and been like, this is our sea, it's this thing.
Okay. And
this is ours.
That kind of makes a lot of sense.
That's kind of
we claim this whole area here, everything we can see is ours.
That's kind of what I was thinking,
you can get all yours over there, and this is whatever we're doing here.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's my understanding, at least.
No, I think so, yeah. In Argentina, by the way, it's illegal in Argentina to sell a map of the country that does not include their chunk of Antarctica.
I believe that.
And they have a pretty substantial chunk, they claim. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
it's, that's a waste of paper.
Yeah.
It is. So back to our ships. The USS Yancey was also part of the central group. The USS Merrick and the Yancey were both on supplies.
Mm-hmm.
That's all they were. The USS Senate, which is S-E-N-N-E-T, not like Senate, like this Congress and the Senate, which was a submarine, and the USS Burton Island, and the USCGC, so the United States Coast Guard.
Cutter.
Northwind, the Burton Island and the Northwind were both icebreakers, and the Northwind...
That's handy down there.
It was the only non-naval vessel that was sent on this expedition.
And
but
the only one that didn't survive.
Who killed it? But it was also literally state-of-the-art. It was part of the wind class. It was her and her sister ship, which was called the Southwind.
Makes sense.
I believe Southwind. And they were like state-of-the-art right off the line icebreakers, and they were in service for a really, really, really long time. This was one of the first expeditions that they were sent on. So again, we're sending fancy tools down here.
Mm-hmm.
There was the carrier group, which was just one ship. It was the USS Philippine Sea. And then the West group, which was the USS Currituck, which was another seaplane tanker. The USS Henderson, a destroyer. And finally, the USS Casaupon, which was another tanker.
Okay.
How many more ships do we have? This list is huge.
I know, I'm sorry.
On.
I told you there was a lot of ships.
Okay, listeners, you memorized that?
We got a lot of ships to go through.
Yeah. The Western group of ships reached the Marquesas Islands, which is part of French Polynesian Islands, or right. French Polynesia.
Yeah, I hear that's a nice place. Like
I've
Tahiti
heard that too.
And all that stuff.
Yeah.
I'm going to go.
Going to Tahiti.
Yeah. I'm
going to
go someday. Probably not as soon as you.
Yeah, the Polynesian Islands, they're super nice. French Polynesian Islands. There's also... U.S. Polynesian Island?
Nah, I think so, yeah.
There's a bunch of different Polynesian islands.
There's too
many
to keep track of at the moment.
These islands are parallel with northern Peru, kind of close to the equator, actually.
Yeah, not exactly a great place to set up as your base of Antarctic operations.
Yeah, it's basically halfway up the world.
Yeah. But I think they wanted to just stop off and like party for a couple of weeks, maybe. That was like an integral part of the mission.
It really is. It was funny as I charted the course, you know, just because I have Google Earth open and I was trying to figure out, which, by the way, figuring out north on the South Pole is really a pain in the butt.
Yep.
But the point is, I was looking, I was like, okay, so where is this in relation to the United States? And if you went from, if you left California and you went on a 45 degree angle, it is almost exactly halfway between the U.S. and Antarctica.
Yeah, it's not
and
exactly
it seems to be, as you said, kind of a stop-off point.
A little bit out of the way, though, not kind of.
Well, one thing I will say is that it is, it's not my understanding that all of these ships were coming from the same ports.
Oh, I'm sure they were.
You know, especially, like, even in the same group, right? The Western group was all coming from different ports, and they had to have some place where they were like, all right, meet there, and then we'll all go through the dangerous part together, because that's why we're in a group, is so that we can, you know, all work as a team to go down. So I think that it was probably a pretty convenient spot. I suspect that some of the ships were not coming from America. So it was like, let's just all meet here and party for a little while and then go down.
Yeah, there were probably some coming from who knows where, Japan or you know, Pearl Harbor or God knows where.
Yeah. So they didn't actually reach that set of islands until December 12th, 1946. So this when we're talking about this expedition running from 1946 to 1947, I know you have the impression that it was like a year, but it was really like less than 6 months.
It was like a couple of months.
Yeah, it was like
month.
Three or something.
Yeah, but less than six. Yeah. It was less than a half a year.
Yeah.
And keep in mind, because I actually had this question initially. It's like, why are you going there in the winter? That's so dumb. But it's actually the summer in Antarctica. Yeah. So it's the best time to be there if there is a good time.
There's
a little confused, that part of the world. Yeah.
Yeah, they are.
They're upside down.
Yeah. They are.
When they all got there, a bunch of the seaplanes started exploring southerly just to make sure, you know,
the
conditions are good. You know, are there islands that we should stop at? Because I think, you know, there was a lot of stuff that was still uncharted. I mean,
we didn't have satellites back in those days. Hard to remember, but
we were pretty sure we knew where things were. But, you know, when you can't take pictures from space, you're like, well, I don't know. I think there might be an island there, but that could be from one of those fake maps that's, you know, to test us.
We talked about that years ago. Yeah,
we did. Yeah. So that was on December 24th is when they launched those. So after 12 days, they launched all of these seaplanes to explore down in the south regions. The eastern group of ships reached Peter the First Island in late December. There's not really a date attached to this. Late December of 46. The Peter the First Island is just about 280 miles away from Antarctica.
That's kind of close.
That's 450 kilometers for you folks who don't use the smart measurements. It's currently claimed by Norway, along with our favorite little island, Bouvet Island.
By the way, is the boat still there?
I think so. Hmm. I don't know.
It's
I haven't gone out there.
Probably their national monument.
Yeah.
It's the Norwegian National Monument, actually, is this real weird boat on a tiny little island on the totally other side of the world.
You know, if Norway had half a sense of humor, they would, like, take the boat away and replace it with another boat, that like a sailboat or God knows what, you know? They really should just mess with the world's heads.
You know what we should do is we should start a Kickstarter campaign or GoFundMe campaign to get all of us to go down to Bouvet Island, to just the three of us, and just replace the ship. On our own, don't you think? I think that's a good idea.
I will go. I will take that challenge.
Hire a stand-in. I believe it's going to be rather cold.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Cold.
That's what parkas are for.
I don't like the cold.
That's what tauntauns are for.
I don't like the cold.
Okay.
And it's not that bad in the summertime. Their summertime, not ours. Yeah.
Famous last words.
True.
Yeah.
Now, Antarctica has that kind of peninsula that Joe was talking about a little earlier that runs north towards South America.
Mm-hmm.
Granted, every peninsula off of Antarctica runs north, but this one, like, really runs north. It's the only peninsula.
It goes way the hell north.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there are two kind of, like, gulfs. There's the one gulf that's, like, inside the peninsula, and then there's, like, the gulfs on the outside.
Yeah.
Both of which have ice shelves over the gulfs. The Ross Ice Shelf, which is where Little America is, was?
I don't know if it's still there or not.
Probably still there. There were a lot of Little Americas. It's kind of like south of New Zealand, kind of on the other side. It's hard, like Steve was saying, like it's almost impossible to say, like, it's no, like there's no...
Getting your bearings is difficult.
Yeah, you can't say, well, it's like It's like north. It's like east. It's like...
You need to go by longitude. I mean, that's the only way to do it. I mean,
right.
So starting at 0 degrees and just working your way around, that's kind of the way to do it.
I didn't do that, so...
Using a calculator like that is annoying, though, so...
So realistically, what you have to do is, if you really care about where the Ross ice shelf is just Google it. It'll pop up.
It's easy
up.
To see. Easy to find.
It's white. You have to zoom out a lot. Before you can see anything but white, but then it'll show up and it's fine.
Yeah.
That was just to help you get a little bit of bearings. The Eastern group arrived at the Bay of Whales, which is a seaport for the Ross ice shelf.
I mean, actually was. It went away.
Okay, was.
Yeah. It kind of disappeared when an iceberg was born.
Melted or whatever, yeah.
Yeah.
So they got to the Bay of Whales, like I said, on January 15th of 47. A little more than like a month later. Yeah, in late February of 1947, they were ordered to return home.
Mm. Mission is a success. Go home.
Plus, it's getting freaking cold.
Yeah,
so that's another reason.
Yeah. The goings on of the actual time on the Ross Ice Shelf aren't particularly well documented for public consumption. Which is why we get to do an episode on it.
Absolutely. Yeah. They didn't have like documentary film crews along for the whole
They
ride.
Did have some journalists, but since it was an active mission of the military.
Plus the journalists all died, didn't they?
No. Four men did die, but none of them were journalists. But the Navy got to say what.
They got to review what they wrote and approve it.
Right. I mean, the only form of communication was on a naval ship.
Did you read how some of these guys died, though?
There was a plane crash for three of them, I think.
Yeah, but the other guys?
Well, he got sort of squished underneath.
That was horrible. Yeah. So if you've ever seen the big thing that, you know, they pour asphalt to make a road, and then they've got the big steamroller job that goes across it.
He fell
they had
that.
One of those to pack the ice to make runways. He was, like Wile E. Coyote on many occasions, sucked under the wheel.
Yeah.
So it's actually interesting. I've read two different accounts of how he died.
Oh, really?
Both of them are horrific. There was that one, and then there was another one where they were using a fork, like a giant forklift, to unload some of these other big pieces of machinery.
Mm-hmm.
And he just happened to be in the way, so he got crushed. They like put down the tractor on top of him.
Oh, not knowing he was there.
Yeah. Which is also really rough.
That's why, you know, whenever there's unloading of big things, I'm far away.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah,
as
seriously.
Far away as possible.
That's why Joe is the worst to help move.
I was going to say, they're like, Devin, come help. And I'm like, I can't, my back hurts. Sorry. Bye. I'll take some pizza
Okay,
though.
So
Sorry.
The four men die, and then what happens?
Yeah,
and
but
they were called in February, so where does that leave us?
Great question, Steve.
Yeah.
Well, no, I mean, so the thing is like these four men died, but that wasn't the reason that they were called back. They were called back because the weather was bad. That was an acceptable amount of casualties, apparently.
A much
higher number would have been acceptable.
There are numbers about that. But out of 4,700 men, four deaths, you know. I mean, but especially in a hostile, dangerous environment like Antarctica, it's kind of to be expected that at least a few people are going to die.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but that's the thing is like, we don't really know what happened down there. They were supposed to be building this base and they were kind of paving a way for an airway, but that kind of didn't really pan out. And then they were supposed to be like training on combat, but a lot of the ships were there for like 2 weeks. So I don't know. I mean, there is a lot of training you can do in 2 weeks, but it seems like not a lot of stuff happened, which is kind of weird.
Well, you know, I think that they were probably doing stuff like just testing their new toilets on board the ships just to make sure that they truly didn't freeze up like they were supposed to not do.
Yeah,
right?
Probably that's what was happening.
Stuff like that.
Yeah. I mean,
checking the plumbing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, I mean,
making sure the heaters worked.
Yeah, that was one of the stated missions was just to see how well some
Test
of their
the
gear
equipment.
And other stuff held up in those kind of conditions. And so I guess a month is long enough to do that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's true, yeah. Byrd gave an interview in March of that year.
Admiral Byrd?
Admiral Byrd, retired, gave an interview in March of 47 on his return. I think he was in Argentina. I can't remember, to be honest with you, what.
I think it was South America.
Yeah,
somewhere
came
in South
back
America.
To Chile or something. I was thinking it's
it
Chilean.
Yeah. I think you're right. Yeah. Where basically it was this kind of weird interview, and I don't know how accurate it is, but I'm going to read part of it because it kind of adds to
And you see this everywhere.
Yeah, and it adds to the intrigue. Actually, Joe, do you want to read this?
Oh, sure. Let me put on my Admiral voice.
Yeah.
I'll just give the whole thing here. Admiral Richard E. Byrd warned today that the United States should adopt measures of protection against the possibility of an invasion of the country by hostile planes coming from the polar regions. The Admiral explained that he was not trying to scare anyone, but the cruel reality is that in case of a new war, the United States could be attacked by planes flying over one or both poles. This statement was made as part of a recapitulation of his own polar experience in an exclusive interview with International News Service. Talking about the recently completed expedition, Byrd said that the most important result of his observations and discoveries is the potential effect that they have in relation to the security of the United States. The fantastic speed with which the world is shrinking, recalled the Admiral, is one of the most important lessons learned during his recent Antarctic exploration. I have to warn my compatriots that the time has ended when we were able to take refuge in our isolation and rely on the certainty that the distances, the oceans, and the poles were a guarantee of safety. Unquote.
So that leaves a lot of people questioning.
Well, yeah, especially, I mean, I could totally see actually flying over the poles. I mean, actually, he was a little bit prescient because, of course, now we're looking, we're always watching
we're always
for those,
circling them.
We're always watching for those ICBMs come flying over the pole from the North Pole from Russia. I'm not so sure about the South Pole.
I mean, yeah,
if Russia or anybody else, I mean, frankly, even if Australia wanted to attack us, I think there's better ways than flying over the South Pole to get to us.
Agreed.
Yeah.
I was going to say the other thing is that a lot of people read, and much as you have stated, I always took this, at least initially, I took it the way you said, of like flying over the poles, coming from somewhere, going over the pole and hitting us.
Uh-huh.
But he could have also meant something akin to what we were trying to do, which is someone establishes a base, so they're flying from the pole. So it's technically, it's kind of over the pole to us, but that cuts down the distance required greatly.
Well, yeah, and I'm thinking about, like, if you think about the situation then, because the Cold War is starting.
Yep.
We're looking at potentially catastrophic war with the Soviet Union.
Mm-hmm.
And think about, you know, that with all these planes and everything they have left over from World War II, if they wanted to, say, fly up to the North Pole, establish temporary bases for supplies of fuel, etc., and just refuel their planes there, all their bombers and stuff, for an invasion of the U.S., you know, that's entirely a feasible thing.
Well, and they would have to have some sort of base of operations, because I actually looked into this, is that bombers of, you know, large caliber planes like that are able to carry that kind of equipment had a range of about 2,000 to 3,000 miles.
Yeah.
So they would have had to have started. They couldn't have made the trip in one fell swoop.
Oh, yeah. That's why you say you just establish temporary bases where they can stop, refuel, everybody goes to the bathroom, and then off you go on
the
way.
That's the most important part of the flight.
Seriously. I mean, I still wonder about those guys, like, you know, like flying those long missions and like F-15s and B-2 bombers and all that stuff. I mean, what do you guys do?
There was a bucket.
Is that what it is? A bucket?
No, I've read accounts. There was a bucket.
Well,
and God help you if there was turbulence and the bucket spilled and you were the low man on the totem pole, you had to clean the bucket.
Yeah, no, I'm thinking more of the guys that are like sitting in it, like say an SR-71 where you're in a tight little cockpit. You can't stand up and walk back to the bucket and urinate it.
No, that's a diaper situation.
I guess a diaper or maybe a coffee can. They give you a coffee can. You
I don't know. But you guys
but
are
treading. Off base,
yeah, you're treading into theories category, actually.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah.
You're right. Diaper is
next week. Next week, our mystery. What do those guys do?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, but I mean, there are some questions.
Oh,
you know,
well, especially the stuff about flying over the poles, especially the South Pole.
And we're going to talk about that in a second. But I do, you know, one of the questions, right, is like, why did they call this high jump? Like, they're going to the most southern point of the world and calling it high jump?
Actually,
why?
And that's suspicious, but I can answer that question.
I'm sure you can. Can you do it in theories?
Yeah.
Yeah, great. Perfect. So Byrd, you may remember, I said, he didn't show up until like way late. He showed up on January 30th and the evacuation orders were sent in like the middle of February. So
that's the way I would do it if I was going to Antarctica.
I would do it too.
Yeah.
It seems like a lot of effort to put into basically what was like a month of photographs, because that was really the only takeaway that happened from this mission, is they did take about 70,000 photographs.
About half of which were selfies.
No, but most of them were useless because there was no ground control. on any of it.
And what that means for people who don't know is you fly in a grid pattern so that you can line things up. And they didn't do that. They just kind of flew around.
And took some pictures.
So they had no way of linking them together.
Yeah, yeah.
This is what's white. Hey, it goes with the one right next to it, which is
perfect.
White as well.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
So that's kind of sad. And I don't know why they didn't have some sort of more disciplined effort for that.
They should have. But that also raises questions for people is like, maybe were they doing something else?
Maybe they were just flying around like looking for, you know, secret stuff.
Or were they hiding something, right? Maybe they did find something and they were like, oh, what do you mean we didn't take any pictures of that grid part? Whoops.
They just pulled them out and took the notes off of them.
Totally. So that is the question we're going to talk about in theories is what was the real reason for this operation?
Absolutely. Yeah.
But before we do that, let's take a break.
Everyone always thinks that little green men, or yes, as Devin says, maybe they're gray, are coming to Earth to take over and enslave us. But did you ever stop to wonder why they keep stealing our cows? What have the cows ever done to them? Well, the answer may be that cows, according to their culture, are the most highly prized pet that any green-skinned, big-eyed sentient can receive. And this is why whenever a pair seal their bond to one another, their family and friends have to travel all the way across the galaxy in search of one of our black-and-white bovines. As luck would have it, you and your friends don't actually have to travel all the way across the universe to get the perfect gift. And the reason is because of Zola. Zola is the wedding company that will do anything for love. They are reinventing the wedding planning and registry experience to make the happiest moment in any couple's lives even happier. With over 500 brands and 50,000 gifts, experiences, and cash funds, Zola Registry is everything you love about your favorite department store, plus the things like honeymoon funds, fitness classes, wine subscriptions, and so much more. It's so easy for couples and their guests. And with Zola's top-rated iPhone, iPad, or Apple Watch apps, couples can manage their registries on the go, and over 300,000 couples already have. Best of all, Zola Registry automatically integrates with any Zola wedding website, so guests can seamlessly shop and get all the details they need in one place. I know a certain podcast host on our team who's really loving what Zola can do. To sign up with Zola and receive a $50 credit towards your registry, go to zola.com/sideways. That's Zola, Zola.com/sideways to sign up for a $50 credit towards your registry. Because remember, it's way better than stealing cows.
And we're back. You ready to talk about some theories?
Yeah.
Because I know Joe is like chomping at the bit to talk about what I just told him that he had to wait about to talk about.
So what's theory number one?
Theory number one is that the Navy did it for the reasons the Navy did it.
They were telling the truth?
They were telling the truth.
Oh, when does that happen?
All the time. Duh.
Nah. They said they were going to like win World War II, did they?
Yeah. We get to write the history book, so yeah, we did.
Oh, okay. Never mind.
We've won all the wars that we've been involved in.
Okay.
Duh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we just assume that the Navy is telling the truth, that they sent more than 4,000 troops and several resources down to Antarctica to establish a base for a month, to establish a base for a month, to establish a base for a month.
Yeah, right? That all works.
And do all the other things they said.
And do the, like, 10 other things they said they were going to. Okay, 6, whatever. I mean, you know, and there is, I know this was the thing you want to talk about, right, is, like, why Operation High Jump might have been called Operation High Jump.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Because there's been a lot of suspicion about that.
There has.
Yeah. But this was on the heels of World War II. And the military, the U.S. military, had burned through all the operational names. They have a huge list. And there's a whole office in the Pentagon that maintains this list. And they had pretty much burned through the entire thing. There are only a couple of kind of crappy names left.
Wait, is their list the equivalent to our not brought to you by list? We're like, it's running out.
Kind of like that, yeah.
New petition, change.org, somebody make this petition to make Team Sideways the official namer of operations from now on.
Yeah, I think that'd be kind of cool.
Yeah. They don't have to tell us what they are. They can just be like, we just need like a new name for an operation, and operation we'll be like
Cuddly Hedgehog.
Operation Free Hug.
Mm-hmm.
No,
so anyway,
that is that's about it. I mean, I think that that's not suspicious at all. They just they were stuck with the lame name because that was about all that was left over.
I mean, they did. There was an operation that was fairly simultaneous, which was Operation Nanook. Right, which was also an ice-based one. Like, why didn't they call it like Polar Bear Hug, Operation Polar Bears? Mm. I'm stuck on the hugs right now. Apparently,
yeah, you kind of are.
Yeah, that is a good question, but yeah, Nanook kind of makes sense.
Yeah,
so although that would be probably considered cultural appropriation. So,
well, it would be culturally insensitive. I don't know if it's appropriation.
Well, the thing is, though, I actually, to a degree, this expedition being taken on at this time makes sense when you actually, again, we got to look back a year or three to World War II, and there is that whole time when the Russians and the Germans are going at it, and Germans mostly, are dying in droves because they're freezing to death because they are ill-equipped and ill-prepared for this kind of terrible, terrible cold. And so, in a way, it's like, well, there's some things, you know, Russia and U.S. were kind of giving each other the stink eye. Yeah. Maybe we should just gain a little bit more information just to make sure we don't get caught in that same situation.
Yeah. No, because, yeah, I mean, when you're out there fighting in the snow and your frigging rifle doesn't work, you know, which does that kind of, and things like your Jeep doesn't work or whatever. Yeah.
I mean, the other thing to think about, this is on the heels of World War II, and that'll feed into some of our other theories, but it's also on the beginning of the Cold War.
Mm-hmm.
And it's cold, right? Yeah, but also like with Russia, right? And there's some saying, I think it might be in Russia. I don't know really where it's from, but it's like, all Russia has to do is make it to the winter. And then
Stalin.
Yeah, maybe.
Stalin's the one who said that, I believe.
Yeah, so I don't know if you know like the better quote or whatever, but basically it's basically that. Yeah, all Russia has to do is get to the winter, and then Russia, the land,
Mother Russia,
will fight the war itself. Yeah. Because every single time somebody has tried to invade Russia or otherwise wage war on Russian land, they've just died in the winter.
I mean,
the winter is like 60% of the year there too. I mean,
and that was, the French did it under Napoleon, and they suffered badly. Everybody who tries this, it ends poorly.
Yeah, granted, Napoleon, I think, tried to take like elephants, which maybe not the right choice, but
okay. Listen, he had a lot of issues.
True. But no, so that's something to bear in mind as well. But let's go to more fun theories.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. What are other theories?
This one's less, still not super fun, but still a little more fun. That the main reason of it was actually just to claim more land. And as we mentioned, that I think it was
just
listed
establish
as
a claim of some sort.
Yeah.
It was a specific parcel of land.
Yeah. That was the submission number two that we listed before. But again, it has been publicly denied the entire time, basically, that was actually a reason, which is weird, because like
that was one of the reasons we wanted to get to the moon first.
Yeah, we wanted to claim it as ours.
Yeah, not necessarily claim it as ours.
We own the moon.
We probably do, but we most especially didn't want anybody else getting up there and staking a claim to it.
We wanted the cheese.
Yeah, lots of the cheese and whatever, the cow that jumps over and all that stuff.
Yeah, one of my favorite things is this like thought process of what if like China or Russia went to the moon and went up and just like knocked our flag over? What would you do? And I'm pretty sure that America would spend the millions of dollars that it would take to send another man to the moon.
If only we could do it for millions of dollars, Devin.
Trillions of dollars. Yeah. However much money it would take, we would be petty enough to send another man to the moon or woman, another person to the moon, to knock their flag over and be like, what?
Uh-huh. The current Yahoo would either do that or go on a Twitter tirade. One of the two.
No. That like, I am fully supportive of NASA doing that in the instance that China or Russia go.
No, for sure. We should go back to the moon anyway, or at least hire somebody like Stanley Kubrick to fake it.
Fake it again. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, Elon Musk is going, so
he'll fake it.
Yeah.
Oh, Musky.
Old Musky.
Anyway, that was
your ox.
That was the long version of this extra theory. Is that also it was for this theory or this mission that of course it was
to claim a little piece of land. Why not?
Of course
not?
It was.
Oh, everybody else was running down there and staking a claim, and some of them seem to take their claims kind of seriously,
like Norway or Argentina, which is the one.
Yeah,
that you have to have it in the map.
Well, yeah, no, it seems like but Argentina does, but a lot of the other countries do too. Although they've sort of officially declared that, because some of their claims kind of overlap a bit, and so they've officially declared that even though their claim is the right one, they're not going to make a huge stink over it.
Smart.
Oh, that's very big of them.
Everybody signed a treaty, so everybody's decided, yeah, we're right, but we're just going to like just not, you know, shoot anybody over it. Okay.
So this next theory is that it was a response to aliens or a battle over a Nazi sanctuary.
Yeah.
This is really the UFO theory, right?
It's a good one, actually. I've always liked the idea of the secret Nazi base in Antarctica.
Too. Yeah. So that's one of the big proponents, or one of the big parts of this theory is there is a theory out there that there was a Nazi base that was established on Antarctica. Mm-hmm. And that's where, like, you know, Hitler, because he didn't actually die, he was taken down.
He and his German Shepherd.
To Antarctica, mm-hmm. Yeah.
He had a German Shepherd. He had a pet German Shepherd that he loved.
I know.
He took her with him. Is it Eva Braun?
Yeah.
He left Eva Braun behind. Yeah.
Well, she had a bullet hole in her head, I think.
Yeah, so he left her
really
behind.
She wasn't really a great traveling companion. You know? I mean, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, it is a big theory that they had this thing down there and that we knew about it. And so we sent a bunch of naval ships down there to once and for all obliterate the Nazis down there, I guess, is the way that that goes.
Take that, Jerry.
Basically, that in this theory, it was not storms that forced them to retreat. It was UFOs. Again, either terrestrial,
allied with the Nazis.
Either terrestrial or non-terrestrial. That's right. I'm talking about Nazi UFOs or alien UFOs all together in one coherent theory.
Yeah.
Yeah. Take that.
No, I like it. No, it's entirely possible.
Yeah, I have some questions about that, but I'll wait till you get to the end of
this. Great. Okay, so here are some other things that people present as evidence. You might be able to hear my air quotes around that. Yeah. Evidence for this theory. Apparently, some of the ships were lost.
They were misplaced.
Yeah,
This is not during the mission, though.
It was after the mission?
Yeah, they just sort of were misplaced. Mm-hmm.
USS Pine Island was struck from the Naval Register at an unknown date. Her title was transferred to a Maritime Administration for layup at the National Defense Reserve Fleet. She was actually re-registered in Portland, Oregon.
Mm. Ooh, pick me.
What?
Do you know where? Zydell.
Yeah.
Zydell right here on the Willamette.
Yeah, Zydell.
In Portland, Oregon.
A stone's throw from where we sit right now.
It's true.
But it's...
oh my God. We're the product.
Technology.
We're the product of it. Oh my God.
Probably. But yeah, but I believe that it was given to Zydell just to be chopped up for scrap.
Oh yeah, no, it was a scrapped up ship. Yeah.
It was.
No, actually, I saw an aerial photo of Zydell. I mean, huge acres and acres of land right next to the Willamette. And they had like at least a dozen Navy ships tied up there in the river.
Yeah.
And on land, acres and acres of just piles of scrap. And they had it all sorted out in the various things, but just piles and piles of it. Really cool photo. I'm not sure I was supposed to have seen that or not. It might have been classified. But
people don't know Zydell was a scrapyard.
Yeah. Yeah. Ship scrapyard, mostly. Yeah. Yeah.
But anyway, I don't think it's any coincidence that this ship went down and participated in this and then right after that, or 20 years after, 30 years after, was chopped up, you know, and scrapped. I mean...
You don't?
Yeah, it was 1972, I think, officially.
They've done that to a number of ships.
Right, but it was struck from the register before. It disappeared.
Yeah.
And then it came back just to be scrapped.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have no idea how that happens. But, you know, I mean, it's a big bureaucracy, the Navy is, and I imagine they misplace ships all the time.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure that you could have just called them up and been like, hey, did you know that the USS Pine Island was, like, missing from these dates on your registry? And they'd be like, oh, look at that. We'll fix it.
Someday.
Whoops. Yeah. Cool.
Thanks.
Thanks, guy.
Call them up and you tell them that, and there's a scream, and the phone drops. You know, hear them running away, and then pretty soon somebody else comes. I says, never mind. It's all okay.
It's taken care of. Yeah. It's taken care of. It's fine. Yeah. What's your thank you? We want to send you a thank you package. What's your address?
Yeah.
Where are you located right now?
Men in suits and sunglasses will be delivering our thank you.
Another thing that people say to back up their Nazi sanctuary slash alien technology theory.
Nazi sanctuary?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, that's what it is. It's a retirement home for Hitler.
Okay.
I'd call that a Nazi sanctuary.
Onwards.
Nazi Hills.
Nazi Hills?
Nazi Hills.
What's Nazi Hills?
The Nazi sanctuary.
Oh, okay.
In Antarctica.
I think you're thinking Nazi estates.
Anyway, sorry.
Nazi estates.
Uh-huh. So apparently there's a claim that Bird's remarks in the newspaper, the one that Joe read a couple minutes ago, was actually a bitter reality in the case of a new war. The continental U.S. would be attacked by flying objects, which would fly from pole to pole at incredible speeds, which leads these researchers to believe that Bird himself was trying to warn people about the UFOs he'd encountered down there without, like, trying to circumvent, use that word right, his gag order from the Navy.
Yeah.
Although or he just saw the speed at which missile technology was moving and thought,
yeah. Or the one that Joe read was a good translation and this one was a weird translation.
I think the one that I read was actually, it wasn't actually a direct quote. It was more like a summary of his remarks.
Yeah.
And it could have been misrepresented as the idea of things coming over both poles. Maybe they meant the North Pole.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know.
I mean, so the big question here is, like, why would the Nazis be hiding down yonder?
Well, because nobody else would go there.
Well, so except for tons of people were going there all the time.
That's why they're on the moon, too.
Yeah,
yeah. But a continent the size of Antarctica, even if hundreds of people go, are there at any given time, you're mm-hmm. still pretty unlikely to run into them.
True, yeah. And, you know, as long as you put yourself kind of, as long as you use some white camo around your base, you're probably good.
Yeah, the only question is, how do you feed them? Natural resources being snow and more snow.
Oh, yeah, no, the Nazis have absolutely perfected greenhouse technology. Uh-huh. Of course they have.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right? Well, and maybe they don't need to because maybe they actually have alien technology. Because the other theory is that Nazis, you know, again, this isn't an episode about that necessarily, but we've talked a little bit around the idea that the Nazis might have had, like, flying saucer UFOs and also had some kind of weird technology of, you know, laser guns and stuff like that.
I think they would have won the war if they had that stuff.
I agree. You know,
Yeah.
But maybe, or just maybe, the Nazis in creating their base in Antarctica encountered the aliens and the aliens were like, sure, you can have our technology. You seem like good people.
Yeah, why not?
I don't know. Basically.
What if the Nazis stumbled across the aliens and their secret base?
Yeah.
And they blackmailed them. They said, if you want us to keep your secret, you know, you will hand us your devastating weapons. Otherwise, mm-hmm. we'll rat you out.
True.
And the aliens said, oh, you got us good there. Okay, here you go.
Rather than just using our deadly weapons to obliterate you.
Yeah.
Well, you know, there's actually no rule. I mean, the aliens might have some fantastic technology, but that doesn't mean that they're actually not morons. They could be. They totally could be.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at, there's a lot of people I see walking around today who have the most fantastic technology in their hands, you know, like an iPhone, and they're complete boneheads.
Yeah. Try to explain to your, like, you know, if you ever, somebody came from the past, from the 50s, like, try to explain to them that you hold in your pocket
a
device
of the world
that could access every single bit of knowledge that's ever been held in the entire world, and you use it to, like, look at cat videos. Like, that's mm-hmm. what you use it for, right? Yeah.
So I have a question.
Yeah.
If this theory is saying that there were UFOs, and either they were Nazi-driven or they were little green men-driven.
Yep. Or gray.
Okay, or grays.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The neutral ones.
Uh-huh.
So my question is why, and of course the theory goes on to say that these little guys at least obliterated at least one ship on mm-hmm. the expedition by, you know, going pew, 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 and just blowing it out of the water.
Yeah.
Why are they not destroying any other boats?
Well, because maybe they're actually just scientific observers who are just trying to protect their anonymity.
You're saying they're shy?
Well, I'm just saying they're scientists who are just sent to observe. And the only reason they attacked was because they were being attacked. And then once we left, they were like, great, cool.
Huh?
No?
Makes sense. Yeah, they probably, that makes sense to me.
I'm sorry. I cannot defend this theory particularly well. It's kind of a dumb theory.
Okay.
But I like it because it's fun.
It's fun. The next two are dumb.
Yeah, they're real quick. The next one is that the Navy went down there to further protect the secret of the Hollow Earth.
How would they further protect it?
Well, you know, they circumvented the entire...
Circumnavigated
the entirety of Antarctica. So they were really just securing the perimeter, making sure that no one else was down there.
That makes
and
sense.
Then like, you know, putting somehow deterrence of some kind. I don't know, big electric
holograms.
Fence maybe? Yeah, I don't...
Big electric fence!
I don't really know what...
Yeah, you definitely don't want people discovering that entrance because
a lot of
unclaimed real estate in there.
It's true.
You want to claim your own plot first.
Alternately, very claimed. There's two groups of people who may have claimed already the Hollow Earth. One is Nazis, because that's the other theory, right, is that Nazis are actually living inside of the Hollow Earth. That was the entrance.
They're under your feet right now.
Yeah, that was the entrance, and the U.S. Navy was really going there to be like, all right, you can live down there, but don't come up if I see you step foot out the door.
Plugging the hole.
Maybe
or just telling them.
Maybe they did just blast the hole shut.
Yeah, it's possible.
Just say, hey, you're staying in there and enjoy yourselves. Bye. Yeah.
Alternately, it is where the lizard people who secretly run our lives, it's where they live.
That doesn't make any sense. Lizards are cold-blooded. I've never got that.
Well, but they live inside. That's just where the hole out of the
that would greatly discourage them
inside.
From trying to come out here through one of the coldest areas of our planet. I'm sorry,
you don't want to entertain this too much?
No.
Okay.
If you're lizard people, though, I mean, there's no reason you can't have, you know, parkas, fleeces, all kinds of stuff like that, thermal socks.
They are shapeshifters, you know.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's what Hillary Clinton is.
Please go to the next theory.
Okay. You go right, because it's a better theory, right?
Yeah.
Somehow? Okay, great. The next theory is that they were actually doing this to protect the secret of the flat Earth.
Yeah.
Because for some reason, that's a big conspiracy that, like, everybody's trying to trick trick all of the, like, intellectuals, the, like, higher thinking beings, people of our...
intelligent people?
Yeah, I don't know, whatever. Trying to somehow trick them into thinking that the world is a sphere because I don't know why. Mm-hmm. I don't know who that benefits. Mm-hmm. I don't understand this very much. And I don't know if you guys have seen these maps lately.
Not lately,
of the flat Earth.
Yeah, and Antarctica's a ring around the edge.
Right? It is, So the very center of the Earth, I guess it's a plate. The very center of the plate is the North Pole. And then the outer rim is Antarctica. And so they were really just going to, you know, further secure the perimeter and for some reason keep it a secret. I don't understand the flat Earth thing. I don't understand it. I'm sorry.
Well, no, actually, I like it because, not really, but. I mean, it kind of tells you where it came from, though, because, you know, the North Pole is the center of the whole thing. So, obviously, the people who invented it must live in the Northern Hemisphere. Then they must, obviously. It would be interesting because it calls all of our physics into question.
Yeah.
I mean, it really does. And if our physics have been called into question, that calls, you know, the existence of things like nuclear bombs and laser beams and... Mm-hmm. Gravity and God knows what else.
Gold.
And since people depend on those things, it's like for example, paper currency. We all think $100 bill is worth something.
It's not
because
we've assigned value.
It is worth nothing. What if people were to similarly discover that gravity doesn't exist? Then poof, off we go into space. You know,
so, sure. How it works. Yeah. If you just stop believing in a thing, it stops being real. You're right.
Pretty much. Yeah. A lot of people seem to think that.
I stopped believing in my bill collectors for years.
Oh.
Yeah.
They kept coming around.
I was going to say, really, the moral of the story is $100 means nothing to you listeners, so send it to us.
Absolutely. No, it's really true. It's not worth the paper it's printed on.
True.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know if you saw this recently, but you guys should go look at Neil deGrasse Tyson, or actually maybe it was Elon Musk even, who tweeted at the Flat Earth Society, and he was like, why is there no Flat Mars Society? And they were like, well, because that's been proven to be a sphere. Apparently the Earth is the only one that's flat in the solar system. I just don't understand it.
I like the Flat Earthers, and I gotta tell you why. Is that
it's because of their moxie, isn't
anything?
It
No, it's not just their moxie or anything. I don't agree with everything they say. But what I like about them is they're very civil about the whole thing. They, you know, and there's a lot of people, you know, there's a lot of people that are very self-righteous about the things that they believe. And if you post something they don't like on the internet, they'll destroy you on Twitter, Facebook, whatever. They'll even try to get you fired from your job, destroy your business, whatever. The flat earthers are, you know, in my opinion, a model of civility. And that's why, even though I don't buy into their theories, mm-hmm. I have to give them credit.
I think flat earthers in the Church of Satan. Yeah. Those are the two most civil people on the internet.
I think, you know, I wish people would behave more like them.
Yeah,
not
I
necessarily
agree.
In what they believe in the flat earth,
yeah.
but yeah, it would be nice.
Anyway, that's the end of our theories.
Oh. Woo!
I know. Yeah.
I think that, you know, one of my things is I really do think there was a good reason to go down there to just, you know, stake a claim and test a bunch of stuff in the cold. And it's also possible that this was right after World War II. And they were probably at some point they'd just been transporting men back from Europe and you know, the Western Pacific and mm-hmm. stuff, you know, in huge teeming hordes. And at some point, you know, somebody probably said, hey, you know, we can only absorb so many soldiers coming back all at once. Maybe you should slow it down just a little bit.
Yeah.
And they said, okay, in the meantime, we got to find something for these guys to do. So mm-hmm. let's come up with some make work, you know.
Yeah.
Everybody submit your proposals. And Admiral Byrd's like, okay, let's take like
5,000
guys to the Antarctic.
The other thing, though, is that if they're gonna if they are indeed testing things in frigid conditions to make sure they work, you can't take them north because that's putting you very close to an ally who is currently under great tension with you. You can't go to the North Pole because then it's construed as maybe you're trying to make a move on the Eastern Bloc, so it's the only safe move or the safe place to go.
That's another way to do it. Well, also, too, the Antarctica actually is land. I mean, you wouldn't know it. It's all covered with ice.
But it's actually a continent.
Yeah, whereas the North Pole is just, you know, floating ice flows and stuff like that.
I also kind of wonder if, you know, the war ended, but it was kind of looking like there might be another war.
It was.
And, it almost kind of seems like instead of saying, all right, you guys can go home and, like, start your lives, it would just make more sense of like, make
Hang
work,
on your reserves.
You know, let's send them to do this thing. Let's go just send them on, you know, what is equivalent to a busy work paper.
Yeah.
Just have fun with that.
The other thing too is that bureaucracies have a tendency to, you know, defend their turf. And it might have been the Navy was just trying to come up with all kinds of missions to justify a larger budget and justify mm-hmm. not chopping up all of its ships.
Yeah,
they do. I mean, they totally. Even do that today. I mean,
they sure do.
And so that may have been part of this too.
Yeah. So I think we can all agree that this was just kind of like a weird mission that the Navy did, not Nazi UFOs.
That's actually not an unreasonable thing to do, send a bunch of guys to Antarctica for, you know, miscellaneous purposes. Why not?
I actually think that this might have accidentally spawned another little sub-mystery that I've seen floating around on the internet.
Why the heck did Thinking Sideways do an episode on this?
Because it's so small.
Oh.
Okay, it's such a teeny tiny
No,
thing.
I'm sorry. I meant that
oh,
was
Oh, why this episode? No.
Yeah.
No, the thing I'm thinking of, I cannot remember the name of it, but there are these images of these weird objects over the ocean, and I'm pretty sure that they're basically balloons, you know, for target practice, but they're odd-shaped, and so they don't move in regular patterns. But there's these old photos of it. I bet that is one of the things that they were doing is going down there and not only looking around, but, you know, doing practice, target practice and stuff like that.
Why not?
In windy, crappy, I mean, if you want to go somewhere that's got a lot of wind, you go down there, it's crappy conditions.
Yeah, that's a good point, you know, and you probably want to see if they took some destroyers. Destroyers have some fairly decent sized guns on them, mm-hmm. don't they? Yeah. So they might want to just see how the guns perform under that kind of condition.
How accurate are you in this kind of weather?
Yeah, how's your gunpowder hold up in, you know, sub-zero, you know, 200 degrees below or something like that? Yeah.
Well, I'm glad this is like the first time we've all agreed on something. So good job, us.
No, we've done it once or twice.
Yeah.
I mean, we've gone to the same restaurant before. We've agreed on something before.
I guess that's true. I suppose, yeah.
All right, fair enough.
But, yeah, anyway, there might have been a few Nazis hiding out down there. They were probably
haven't found them.
Well, no, actually, when they showed up, the Nazis were probably saying, oh, thank God you're here. I'm ready to go somewhere
Great.
Warm.
Awesome.
Even if it is a prison cell, please.
Thank you. Yeah. So if you want to see some of the links to our really informative research on this topic, you can find that along with links to merch. You can stream the show. There's an episode list all on our website, which is thinkingsidewayspodcast.com. You can find us on social media if you want to get a hold of us that way. You can join the group where you have to answer some questions to get in just to prove you're a real boy or girl. Sorry, it was a Pinocchio reference. I'm sorry. Or you can like the page.
And on Facebook.
On Facebook. If you do like the page, just know like that's not where the discussion happens. So if you post on the page, we'll probably be like, hey, join the group. You can also tweet at us, aka me, which is Thinking Sideways. You can also join the subreddit, which is Thinking Sideways. If none of that really floats your boat, you can go ahead and just send us an email. The email address is thinkingsidewayspodcast@gmail.com.
Float your boat.
Wow.
Naval episode.
It was totally unintentional, I promise. Also, you know where you're finding us. iTunes, Stitcher, wherever.
Google Play, whatever.
If you haven't already, subscribe, leave a comment and a rating. Helps other people find us and reminds us how cool we are.
Yeah, that's right. And while you're out there like leaving us an awesome rating, go to all the other reviews and downvote the bad ones.
Yeah.
Yeah, seriously.
Downvote everybody who you don't agree with all the time.
Yeah.
Be not like the flat earthers.
There we go.
Yeah.
That's very democratic of
you. I know. Yeah. Anyway, all of that having been said, we're going to float on out of here.
Okay. Insert ice joke here.
It's kind of blustery.
Okay. Bye.
That didn't work.
Didn't.
Guy got cold feet. Sorry.
Got a cold shoulder, is what you got.
All right,
bye, guys.
Next week.